Hello, fans of short film, and welcome to another edition of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast. I am Nigel Morgan, and joining me is video production specialist and all-round pop culture extraordinaire, George Moll.
Hi, everyone. Hello.
So we're going to be talking about a few films today, a couple of comedies and one very well-made historical drama. But before we get to all of that, George, tell me a little bit about what's been going on with you.
Yeah, so on the sort of furlough life at the moment, I've been doing a lot of video games, playing Horizon Zero Dawn at the moment, a PS4 game, listening to, is it Fake Doctor's Real Friends?
Scrubs? Fake Doctor's Real Friends, yes.
That's it. Scrubs podcast where they're doing a rewatch. And then they're getting guest hosts on as well, and they've had Bill Lawrence, the series creator, and now they even do a thing where they can ask him a question at any point and he'll do a voice note afterwards and it'll be added in when you listen to the podcast, which is just great. Donald Faison's got this whole bit about how they're better than the Scrubs wiki. There's stuff you get from us you're not going to get on the Scrubs wiki. Screw the wiki. Which is interesting because I just know whoever owns that wiki is sitting there going, thank you, Donald, something else to add to the wiki. Which is just, I find that so fun in a sort of roundabout podcast kind of way. So I'm consuming sort of Scrubs and doing a rewatch of The Office at the moment, and that's been most of my lockdown sort of media, as well as a few short films every now and again, which is lovely.
Awesome. Yes, I also have been binging The Office. To my shame, I have not actually watched it before now, so I'm making up for lost time.
Well, me too, so we both are.
There we go. Yeah, it's fantastic. Even further to my shame, I'm watching the American one first. Don't hate me.
You should have watched the first. I told you this when we were in an office together. You should watch the English one first, just the first two seasons. It's a mini series. It's English, so there's only 6 episodes per season. And it's so awkward. I can't look. I like cringe humor. But sometimes with Michael, even on the American office, I do have to look away. But that's the kind of thing we miss from the office environment. So that sounds great. Give me more of it at this moment.
Coming out of the film world, though, is a bit of news about the AMC cinema chain in the States, which is threatening to not show any films from Universal after Universal's successful premium VOD run of Trolls World Tour. It's an interesting one. On the one hand, you've got a whole bunch of studios who had release dates and they're locked in, they're ready to go, and then obviously the coronavirus pandemic occurs. And all of that has to be shut down. I mean, not to go into the mechanics of the industry too much, but the release dates of any given film are kind of a big deal. They're very difficult to move because there are a lot of moving parts attached to it in terms of not just where it's going to be seen and when it's going to be shown, but also any tie-ins that are attached to it, any promotions that are being done in line with it, any ad space that's been bought, stuff like that. So moving the release date, huge deal. So, you know, these guys have had to kind of think on their feet and pivot and do what's best for their business and for the films they're releasing and so on and so forth. Me personally, I did not expect the premium VOD thing to work because you're talking about films that in a couple of months will be available for like $9.99 if you're talking like top end digitally, $13.99 maybe, and that's to keep. They're doing a rental for like nigh on £20. I didn't expect it to work, but apparently Trolls World Tour managed to pull in upwards of $100 million.
See, mate, this is why you need to get a good soundbar in your home, because it's the rise of digital streaming, it's the rise of home cinema setups. My home cinema is an old TV I bought years ago on Amazon wholesale, but like secondhand wholesale. I've got an LED light strip around it, which I sometimes ask Siri or OK Google to change the colour to fit the theme of my film, and then a soundbar for £60 I got on Facebook Marketplace. This is not high-end, state-of-the-art home cinema, but it's pretty decent. It works, and it's very preferable, and I can almost hear a film the way I should. I'm not seeing it or hearing it exactly the same as a cinema, but it works. It's interesting that Trolls World Tour was the sort of catalyst, the straw that's broken the camel's back in this sort of situation, but I guess it kind of makes sense with all these kids at home in lockdown. If you've got a family of even more than 2 kids, if you rented, back when I was younger, Tarzan was the film that was on my video player like every single day. I watched it 5 times a day. I would say to my mum, I couldn't pronounce video, I would say video. Mum, can we watch a video? And we'd put on Tarzan and I'd watch it 5 times a day. If you can tell me that if I was a parent today, I can rent a film for £15 that was in the cinema that my kids have been eager to see, and I can just put that on a loop for 3 days for only £15, I'd say, where do I sign up? Please give me more. So I can understand it, but I'm hoping this is not the end of cinema as we know it, which is AMC's fear. They're clearly saying, well, now we don't want to have any Universal films, because Universal, I think, actually said that they would release a film in the cinema and VOD at the same time. But there needs to be a grace period. There needs to be a grace period of minimum a month, if not three. I remember back when Alice in Wonderland, was it the first one or the second one they made? The live-action one with Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter. I think it came out in cinemas, the first one, and then it was going to go on to Disney's direct-to-DVD within 2 months. And there was a chain in the UK, I believe. It might have even been Odeon or Vue, someone quite big, who were going to pull the film for the exact same reasons, because they don't think it's enough time for them to make their revenue. And when, yeah, if you actually get into the logistics of it, cinema, they don't make a lot of money on the films. It's the concessions and the food and drink and all the addendums and everything that they actually make money on. But still, it's just, well, obviously, us two especially, we don't want to see cinema go in any way, shape or form. That I long for that experience, getting out of the house, especially in today's age, turning the phone off and actually seeing it. But if you're telling me I can avoid all that stress, teenagers talking, kids crying, and just watch the film when I want, but still pay for it at a premium price and understand it's a rental, then I'm open to the idea. I just don't think we're there yet. And the fact that you've got two companies almost already dealing in absolutes about it, it does worry me a little bit for the future of cinema.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm number one, I was not about to spend like £20. I mean, I've got a young son, and I've been looking for stuff for him to watch and to keep him busy as well. And you know, if it's not what would have been out of the cinema, it will be something else. I mean, there's no shortage of content to watch online that is of massive quality. And of course, you've got a lot of buzz around Disney Plus. I mean, here in the UK, it's been out since March. But you know, just on that alone, there's so much stuff that could be entertaining him. So with that as an option, I personally wouldn't have then opted for the premium price option for something that it makes no difference to him. As long as it's a decent movie, he's happy.
Yeah,
that's me. But at the same time, studios still have, you know, they still have a business model to meet, and they still need to get people to see these films. And if you're just kind of going to release it along with this sort of flotsam and jetsam of whatever is on Netflix or... Yes. Apple or whatever, then there's nothing to distinguish it from everything else. That's kind of what the theatrical window at the moment does. And I don't think studios, even if they're going to start embracing stuff like premium VOD, I don't think they want to say goodbye to the theatrical experience either. No. Number one, it's the best way to see the film. And it's the best way to create buzz about the film. And number two, and this kind of will always be the case as far as I'm concerned. I don't know, I may be proven wrong, but whatever does well at the cinema is what gets you that that kudos and that leverage when you then go into the home entertainment market and to those streaming platforms and VOD and so on and so forth. Without that, then it's very difficult to distinguish yourself. I mean, what's the thing that just recently came out on Netflix with Chris Hemsworth, Extraction? Looks interesting, you know, a decent looking action flick. I've been in no hurry to watch it at all.
Me neither. My mates watched it.
Yeah.
I've heard it's got some good action scenes, but because it's free and I only knew about it maybe the day before I got it, I say free, the day before I got it included in my subscription that I already pay for. Yeah, I'm like, okay, add to list, maybe at some point. But as you say, there's so much to watch at the moment. Actually going physically to a cinema for a film, sitting down, knowing you're only going to see that film as well. And once you've paid for it, you've made the choice, you've done it. It's lights off, no talking, go. That's such a big part of the commitment process for me that really makes or breaks a film. It's weird in a way, and I want to be careful with how I word this. I feel like the video on demand thing cheapens the product. The same way when I was younger on Disney Channel and I wanted to watch the Lion King film, I wanted to watch the first Lion King. That was a proper film. I saw it in the cinema when I was a baby, because as you know, I'm very, very young. But then we got it on video. You wanted to watch Lion King 2, Lion King 3. It was direct to video. Disney direct to video or direct to DVD. Just that term, direct to DVD. Immediately you're thinking smaller budget, lower scale. They cash grab, potentially they've made another film. Like, it's weird because... in a way, video on demand makes me think, oh, I can just watch this whenever I want at home on my TV. That's not that big a film then. But Trolls World Tour has still got Justin Timberlake, it's still got all these people in it, and it's still supposed to be big, if not bigger, than the first film. But in my mind now, immediately, I view it as the lesser. Which is unfortunate, and it's not their fault. But what do you think then? Do you agree with AMC? Do you think they're just bluffing? Like, what's your actual opinion of the way they've handled it?
I think AMC have played it wrong. The fact that Universal are even thinking in these terms means that they have options. AMC, as a cinema, they need the people that make films more than the people that make films. We need them, really. If it is an option to release things on VOD and still have it be a success, then cinema chains need to step their game up in order to get people making these films to still come to them and say that we want to show them in this kind of an experience. But I think the interesting thing to look at, I mean, they've talked about the fact that they had unexpected success with premium VOD, with Trolls World Tour. Would they have had the same level of success had the coronavirus not happened? If people had the option of paying $16.99 for 3 days to watch it at home or paying the same amount of money to watch it in a cinema, would it have made that kind of money on that kind of platform? And if the... Well, we're not going to know that until the lockdown's lifted and people start doing it.
No, we can only guesstimate from what we've seen. I assume it wouldn't make as much. I still think it would make a sizable amount because most of the people I saw arguing for it on Reddit, because I genuinely wanted to... I love playing devil's advocate and actually understanding why someone else's opinion feels so wrong. No, that's the very arrogant way of explaining it, but you know what I mean. But they were saying, I have 5 kids. I know, that's my problem. However, if I want to go see Trolls World Tour in the cinema in my local, like, it could have even been AMC, but it was an American talking about it. They were like, that's, you know, $60 in total. That's everyone's tickets, probably one popcorn between 2 kids and everything like that. Or it was £15 and we watched it 3 times over 1 weekend. So for those kinds of people, and there are a lot of families with 2 or more kids, I can understand it. It's just what the market's going to decide. And unfortunately, seeing cinema chains and production companies and producers and sort of agents and everyone arguing is just going to sort of muddy the water. And at the end of the day, what for me as the consumer is the easiest, laziest option? It's not the option I want to go for, but I can see that becoming prevalent.
I don't even think in terms of it being the easiest, laziest. What's the most cost effective, or what has the most value? Because it could be that I just decide to just press a button at home and just watch something, or it depends how much value you ascribe to a particular experience, essentially. And yeah, I mean, taking that the scenario you just outlined, if you've got 2, 3, 4 kids, and they all want to go see this movie, you can pay once for the film, and then they can all watch it for the cost of what would probably be a ticket or a ticket and a half, maybe. Or you pay for their individual ones and spend a lot more money. It depends on what value you ascribe to that experience. But also, one of the things I think needs to be looked at in here, if you're trying to make the theatrical experience more attractive in the presence or the wake of VOD, you've got to do something about the way you actually run your cinema. The most common things I always hear from people is someone's always got the phone on. There was someone chatting. Yeah. No one does anything to tell them to shut up. When I was 13, if I was in a cinema and someone was chatting away, someone would come in and tell them to shut up. And if they didn't shut up, they would be made to leave. That doesn't happen anymore.
No. I've done that job. Recently, in the last time I did that job was in 2014. My job was to go in and tell people off if they were being loud. That's what I assumed the job was, because I remember working in the same, going to the same cinema as a consumer and being told off for talking when I was about 12 years old, and that really stuck with me. And then I did the job, and they said, no, just if people are on their phone, hover around them and they might stop. You're only really allowed to talk to them if they've done it a few times or if someone actively complains to you. So then that means someone would have to talk out loud and complain to me, or leave the cinema and complain to me, and then I would go in and disrupt someone else. So it was asking for more disruption, but that's just the way some cinemas work. Here's one for you, though. This is what interests me. If this wasn't Trolls World Tour, this would be a very different conversation. Because of when sort of lockdown hit and when cinema started scaling stuff back, the films that were out, I wasn't bothered about. I mean, The Invisible Man sounds fun. I wouldn't have really spent money. I would have waited for that to be free on Sky, included in my package on Sky or Netflix, I should say. Anyway, let's say the film was, because it's been moved back now, hasn't it? Black Widow, the next Marvel film, as we are both big, massive fans. What would your choice be? I would rather see that in a Friday night, opening night cinema, full vibe cinema, people laughing, and enjoying it but not talking, I would prefer that. However, if that was available on demand for £20, I would buy it right now. I would stop this podcast and go watch it.
I mean, for if it were up to me, if the option to see it at the cinema was there, I would take it. But what the scenario would more than likely be, there is no theatrical window for it, and it's just there to be watched. Now, being a Marvel fan, I'm probably more likely to watch that one.
Yeah, of course. And it's also with the way that spoilers are and the way the internet works nowadays, you kind of would have to. Exactly, yeah, I thought you'd say that.
Exactly,
yeah.
What I was about to say. Yeah, I mean, my reasons for buying Trolls, as I was saying, is I'm looking for something interesting for my kid to watch. I don't particularly care about it. When it comes to something like Marvel, where I am quite invested in those movies, and you know, I'd follow the online chatter about it and all that kind of stuff, then yeah, I won't be able to go near any social media until I've seen it. So I guess that from that scenario alone, it kind of validates the option. But the question you would have to ask yourself is, if you have the option to watch it at home or watch it at the cinema for a similar kind of price, which one do you do? For me, I guess I would either spend the money and go and get the theatrical experience, but if I'm not willing to go and do that, I'm not willing to spend £20 for something at home where it's going to be available in that exact same format in a couple of months' time for half that price for me to keep as opposed to rent for 3 days.
Yeah, and that's key. Yeah, you're right. It's the time. And at the moment, all we have is time. So that would definitely factor into it as well. Is actually, can I wait a few months and then watch it as much as I want for half the price? Yeah, probably. So it's a case-by-case basis, but it's interesting and something we'll definitely have to follow. And we don't really have that much say in it, to be honest. Until the world resumes, we can't resume how we consume our media. Traditionally, I mean.
Precisely. Speaking of consuming media, we have been on this one topic for quite some time. So should we talk about some short films now?
Let's do it.
So there were a few films we looked at, as we mentioned before. One of them was a historical drama called Pioneers, and is about two women fleeing across the deserts of the American Midwest after a ranch they were in was burnt down. So essentially, the film is about them walking across this desolate landscape, trying to find civilization, water, and essentially to survive. So you have two female leads. So you have Cora and Matty. Now, Matty is pregnant, and Cora seems to be the leader, at least to begin with, until things start to go wrong and tension develops between them as to how they're actually going to get out of the situation. Who actually knows best, so on and so forth. Bianca Russo and Diana Irvine as Cora and Matty, respectively, just absolutely sell the roles that we're presented with. And also, they do very well in terms of what the film does, which is challenges our perceptions as well. So you kind of have these two women who are your sort of prototypical 1800s sort of American frontierswomen. And they seem completely unprepared for the situation they find themselves in, ill-equipped to deal with it. The fact that one of them is pregnant just heightens the fact that they are just that much more vulnerable, which again adds to the tension as well. So the stakes are a plain to see, and they're communicated very, very effectively. It would be very easy to be over the top or overly dramatic with it, but the desperation is played out in their silence, in as much as it is the sort of outbursts of despair, as it were. And it's very very difficult to convincingly convey desperation with silence and just through the eyes, and they can do that in a way that is just really, really breathtaking. Actually, it's great performances. So the directors, Charlotte Fassler and Danny Girdwood, they do great work in terms of setting the pace, in terms of getting really deep into both characters. They will go from these massive panoramic shots right up into big close-ups and things like that. You know, they use every single resource to the best of their ability, and it really,
and it all comes together. And it all sells the believability of the scene and the time and the period. It's from the very first shot, you're like, okay, right, yeah, 1800s-ish time, I'm guessing, from the costume. Like, the makeup and the costume design, they feel natural, and like, the women themselves look kind of malnourished and dirty, and it's believable, but not like movie dirtness, where they've just got suddenly a little bit of, you know, dirt on one bit of their face. Like, it looks natural, like, their lips are slightly chapped, and they haven't got the overly really white teeth that you often see whenever you have a historical drama that just completely takes you out of it. So it all sort of sells the story and the stakes, and makes it even more sort of dangerous for the pregnant woman when you realise how clear it is that these characters haven't got food or water, and they really haven't almost considered all of their surroundings, and that's what really envelops them and takes them in.
The way it's shot is fantastic. It takes advantage of some incredible landscapes. It also just works the colours, so some of the shots sort of at dusk as well. The sky just looks absolutely gorgeous. The light when it's midday and you've got basically the height of heat going on. The colours are washed out, and you can feel just by looking just kind of the burning sun on the two of these women. And you do find yourself wondering whether or not they are actually going to survive or reach any kind of salvation at all. I mean, just kind of going back to those dusk shots for a second, it's just the way that those are framed, graded, it just kind of gives you this sense of temporary relief from the sort of onslaught of the sun.
Yeah,
exactly. But in as much as it kind of relieves that tension, it also sets the scene for building tension as well, because you know that burning sun is coming back.
It's like a brief pause, isn't it? And I like that. And it's good movie darkness as well. It's not completely pitch black. You hate it in sitcoms where they turn off the lights in a bedroom scene and it's still completely lit. This is clearly sort of dusk and the light's not completely gone down in this great, desolate, deserted landscape. And you can still almost see everything. But it's still, if anything, it brings out more of the emotion, the darkness and the loneliness of these two characters. And I thought that was really effective.
The score also is haunting. It just really kind of fits the tone in terms of utter desolation. It kind of gives you the impression that there are ghosts following these women around, even though they are alone for perhaps miles around, that death is kind of stalking them. Juliana Barwick conducted the score for that and did an amazing job. Every individual element works perfectly well with all the other elements, and it presents itself in a way and builds up to a climax you don't see coming as well, which I thought was, again, very, very well executed. It's a fantastic piece of work, and I cannot recommend this one enough. We also looked at a couple of other short films as well, both of which were comedies. So one that we came across was a film called Hot Dog. This is a comedy done in a single shot. So it was written and directed by Patrick Mulberger. And essentially that tells the story of a group of co-workers who attempt to rescue a dog they find locked in a car on a hot day. And basically chaos ensues as they try and figure out how to actually rescue this dog. What I found interesting, but I wish they hadn't had to do it, was the fact that they put front and center in the description of the film that it is done in one shot. It's one of those types of things that I wish I discovered when I watched it.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't then. I just pressed play, mate, full screen. I went, Nigel sent me this short. I like comedy. He said, you'll like this. It's Hot Dog. I pressed play and I went, oh my goodness, is this all in one take? Because this is great. So I actually did get to go through what you missed out on. So I apologize because I got that.
No, don't apologise. I'm glad one of us got to experience that. But at the same time, you know, in as much as it's something I wish I'd discovered, it is what made me click on it. It's like, oh, how are they going to do this comedic scenario in one shot? Let me have a look at that. And it was fantastically well done. Comedy, like horror, is very, very difficult to do well. And this one, it uses the fact that it is one single shot to its advantage in terms of how it tells the story, how tight it keeps the script as well, and how it actually follows the action. When you're doing things in a single shot, you have to be 100% on it in terms of how you stage, how you block, and it does these things really well. It will basically bring characters in and drop them out and come back to them again. And the way it reintroduces certain characters just kind of adds to the comedy. So there's one particular character who is, he's kind of an alpha male, but he's kind of a millennial alpha male. So not in kind of the typical jock way that you're used to seeing. He's very much the kind of person who gets his self-worth from basically by doing stuff that is very, very thoughtful, but doing it in almost an arrogant kind of way. And every time the camera leaves him and then comes back, he's kind of ramped up his machismo but to yes, the next level.
In some way. That's the brilliance of this. The fact that it's one take and it's the, you know, the length that it is. The way comedy works so well by that is doing things sort of is repetition. Comedy is repetition. I don't know if you know this, but comedy is repetition. And a funny thing about that that you may not realise is that comedy is repetition. See, it's not funny, then it is funny, then it's not funny, and then it's funny again. And that's something that this short film really works on, is that sort of repetition. Because it's one take, everything is a well-oiled machine. There's a character moving around this side of the screen who's not important, who's just in the background, who then might come back again later, you know, without getting into spoilers or anything. But it's crazy because comedy is heightening something, putting a hat on the thing and then pointing out, oh, that hat looks funny on top of that thing, and then like leaving it for ages and then bringing it back in. Oh, look, the hat is still on that thing and that shouldn't be there. That's funny again. And that's why I think in this short it works so well, because the camera is basically swarming and circling our characters and we keep seeing the same scene from the same point of view. But now one thing's changed or three things have changed and we don't even... like, it's like visual noise almost at some points, because if you just picked out loads of different points of the frame, you could see the different characters all enacting in their own way how to just to deal with this simple problem that we may face at some point in our lives. Oh, there's a dog in that car and it looks like the window's not wheeled down, like gone down enough, and it's a very hot day. It's just interesting to see these characters sort of in this melting pot of sort of characters all playing off each other, and I think it's done really well in this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one thing that works very well for this kind of a film is that it is intentionally very colourful, both literally and figuratively, via the characters in it. I think at times some of the characters that it presents you with are caricaturish to the point where it starts to grate a little bit. But it kind of takes you right to that limit without going all the way over. I mean, they're still very, very funny. They're very entertaining and keep you in.
And they're mostly believable, but they do have to serve an overarching plot at some point. I mean, we all know that one person when you've gone out for a work lunch who says, guys, we need to be back in exactly 8 minutes and 22 seconds and 3 milliseconds, even though that time doesn't make sense. But we all know people like that. And you're like, no, chill, don't worry about it. So they're all believable. But yes, at some points, is that in service of plot? Or is this character just being annoying now? So, yeah.
Well, I mean,
it does work for this.
In that particular instance, yes, it is. Because the central conflict of the story is between the main character, Matt, played by Alicia Yaff. And essentially, the situation presented to him is meant to put him under pressure and test whether or not he is leadership material. And whether or not he can rise to the occasion of being a leader in a crisis. So the crisis that gets presented is a dog in a hot car, and it's completely not his job description, it's not his problem or anything like that, but he kind of gets forced to have to deal with it and kind of be the leader of that situation, even though that's not his job. And within that as well, you've got an internal conflict with Christina, one of the other co-workers, played by Marissa Rivera, who it seems was passed over for the promotion he just got, and that kind of comes out in the very well-delivered exposition, in fact. So over the course of the story, she basically seems to, at first subtly, and then openly later on, just undermine him, to begin with. So, you know, you've got, like, the beginning where he's like, oh, yeah, Christina, did you send that timeline? And she's like, yeah, no, I thought you were going to do it. She clearly knew she was supposed to do it and just didn't. Knowing, in fact, that he's not really going to do anything about it, or there won't be any consequences for it. And then, you know, as the situation kind of ramps up, that she goes, oh, you know what, you should text your ex-girlfriend. She's a vet, she'd know what to do. Again, bringing people into the situation that have nothing to do with it, that will put him on edge and throw him off kilter. And also it illustrates backstory as well. So without it becoming clunky exposition, we then find out that he's recently broken up with somebody. That also, just again mentioning the promotion, stuff like that. So you're bringing things into the plot that service the story and also
give it serves the scene. It makes it more than a sketch, and it makes it a comedic short film when your exposition not only serves the scene but sort of delivers backstory without being just expositional, which I think this film does well. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and yeah, basically that conflict between the two of them is what moves the story along, and she is actually the catalyst that keeps ramping up the personal stakes for Matt. And that is essentially what kind of provides structure to the story, as opposed to it just kind of being a caricaturish melee of comedic occurrences in a car park. Basically, it actually is a story at the beginning, middle, and end. You're presented with the sort of character question of, is he up to the task of being a leader? And if the answer to that is no, will people find out that he isn't up to the task of being a leader? So the situation has to be ramped up to a point where that question is essentially answered, which is what the film does. And it does it very, very well. So it's good writing, agreed, tight scripting, well, great blocking, great characterization within the central conflict, at least. And it's a colourful, well-structured, very effective comedy, and I definitely recommend this one. And going into our final film. So this one was a pick from George. Which film was this one, George?
Yeah, so this is 1 Minute Time Machine. It's a short that came out in 2014. It's only 6 minutes. Its themes are basically comedy and romance with, I'd say, sci-fi elements. Funnily enough, this is the year 2014 that it came out, that I then made my own short film for college, which was a comedy, a rom-com with sci-fi elements as well, which is quite interesting to see that I clearly stole all my content from these guys. No, I didn't. We had different plots, but similar themes at least. But yeah, the simple premise is there's a character called James. He's really eager to put his 1 minute time machine to use in winning the heart of a girl he's seen in a sort of boy meets girl story. He sees her on a bench at a public park, not in a creepy way, and wants to go over and talk to her and win her heart. But he sort of discovers that there are consequences to his actions, and it plays out very well. It's very sort of funny, very sort of loose cutting. Boy meets girl on the bench. How can I talk to her? How can I impress her? And then he effectively screws it up, says the wrong thing, foot in his mouth, embarrasses himself, and presses his button on his 1 minute time machine in front of him, and he gets another chance. Imagine if you could have another chance, where after a minute of time, you could go, oh crap, I want to redo that minute again. And it sort of plays on that premise. How does he keep doing that? Does he overuse it to the point now where he's making mistakes mid-word, and she might have even enjoyed it, but he just plays it that way, and it shows you what consequences could sort of be played off sort of that world, which is quite interesting because it can sort of give you a double punchline in this sort of short, because what you think maybe punchlines could actually end up being setups. That is the very nature of time travel. One of my favorite films is Back to the Future, because everything that is foreshadowed in that film is paid off, even if you didn't realize it was foreshadowing until your second watch, which I think in this short, the same sort of thing applies, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought this was just fantastic. The setup is simple. Yeah. Everything happens on this one bench between these two people, and their chemistry is brilliant. You've got some cringe comedy thrown in there. You've got him actually starting to make a little bit of progress and, you know, encouraging you to feel a little bit hopeful for his chances and stuff like that.
And then the rug's pulled from underneath you almost immediately, and you feel for him and with him. It's almost like you bite your own fingers where you're like, oh, why did you say that? It's that kind of cringe comedy that puts you in with the cringe as well, because now you want this guy to succeed. It's the kind of short I really like, because you know, even after the short, no spoilers intended whatsoever, but you know that it's the kind of sort of sketch or short that ends, and you know these characters still exist beyond the credits. We know that stuff still is going to happen, and the world still exists, and it's still a believable sort of world, even though it's got sci-fi elements. It's interesting because you know, you feel like that you've seen these characters before, but you haven't seen them like this, which I really enjoyed. Watch it, because we don't want to tell you anything else about it. Just it's very quick and easy, and you'll see why I think about this film every time I've seen the time travel as a plot device in any film since.
100% agree. It's a quick watch. It's an engaging watch, and it'll keep you thinking about it once the movie's over. Obviously, every film that we talk about is a recommendation. We are here to promote great short film and great short film makers. The links to these films are going to be in the description of this podcast. We'll also have written reviews on cameolaunch.com. Head over to our website and just check out the reviews for these films and the films that we've already reviewed in the past as well. You can also subscribe to this podcast and get alerts as to when new episodes are posted. If you head over to cameolaunch.com as well, you can subscribe to our newsletter and get updates on new reviews, new movies we've looked at, new podcasts, and all the new content that we're producing as well. If you want to keep in touch with us via social media, you can reach us via @CameoLaunch on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So yes, we will keep our ear to the ground and keep on bringing you reviews of the best short films online. George, we're hoping to get you back next week to talk short films again.
I will be here as long as I can be here for. So keep it Cameo Launch if you want to hear more of both Nigel's and my own natterings on about short films and the odd bit of movie news sprinkled in, because who doesn't love an opinion about film?
In the meantime, everybody stay safe, stay at home, look after each other, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.